From space, sunlight starts to illuminate the darkened Earth. A multitude of shafts of bright light shoot up from the surface of the globe and pulsate as it spins in space. Land and blue sea become visible. In white lettering, the name Universal encircles the center of the spinning globe, fringed with flickering white light. The screen fades to black. Against a black background, a shiny water droplet falls into a dark pool, creating a circle of ripples which reflect light. The ripples undulate into the word Imagine in two-toned gold and orange letters. Beneath, in small white lettering, the word Entertainment. Universal Pictures and Imagine Entertainment present a Brian Grazer production in association with Alphaville. A middle-aged man with a ponytail sings as he drives along in bright sunshine.
I am just a poor boy, though my story's seldom told.
His Jaguar XKX convertible glides along a sun-baked road lined with luxurious houses and palm trees. The car speeds along, then reaches a smart, leafy suburb. Branches are reflected in the Jag's broad windscreen.
Just to come on from those gals on 7th Avenue.
Woohoo!
Slowing down, the metallic blue Jag rounds a corner into a sun-dappled driveway shaded by trees. A van with Oriel Fix-It emblazoned on its side stands outside the garages of a Spanish-style mansion. The cool dude with the ponytail and shades pulls up in a cloud of dust. He looks suspiciously at the van, unfastens his seatbelt, and gets out of his car. Wearing a baggy beige linen suit and a white collarless shirt, he walks hesitantly towards a large, unvarnished wooden front door. There's an Oriel Fix-It compliments tag attached to one of the elongated S-shaped wrought iron handles. He looks at the tag. He enters the house tentatively and looks around. At the bottom of a majestic terracotta-tiled staircase with a wrought iron banister, he spots a pot of cleaning utensils. The noise makes him look up to the landing.
Bonnie?
Who is it?
He climbs the cantilevered staircase, passing an oriental carpet hanging on a white wall.
Donnie?
Bonnie?
Yes?
Frowning, he moves along the upstairs hall. Rounding a corner, he catches a flash of someone running across the end of the hall into a room.
In here?
Donovan looks perplexed, then enters a luxurious bedroom. He immediately clocks the unmade double bed. Bonnie, a good-looking blonde, comes out of the bathroom.
Yes?
She glances at the bed.
Donovan, is everything all right?
Yeah, the production meeting was put off, so I thought, who's here?
Here?
What? Who owns that piece of shit van down there?
Oh, it's just a guy, you know, going door-to-door selling pool cleaner.
So why did he lock himself in the den?
Well, he... God. Remember my friend Ollie?
Ollie Ollerud, short, cretinous wanker.
She nods to a door behind him.
Ollie's in there?
Yes.
I see. Well, I'm glad he finally got himself a job. I'd always picked him as some sort of deadbeat, but happy to be proved wrong. So he's selling pool cleaner now. Oh, well. This is the neighborhood for that. Just door-to-door, running low on chlorine, that kind of thing. It's quite a coincidence, him just dropping by and you two knowing each other so well.
Donovan, please. Let's just all talk. I mean,
How you doing? Donovan? How you doing, man?
Good day, Ollie. I'm great. You?
I can't complain, man.
Excellent. Well, let's get right down to it then, shall we? We'll take a couple of vacuum hoses. We probably need a new filter around about now, maybe. Wait a minute, darling. Do we actually have a swimming pool?
Okay, man. Now, let's be reasonable about it, okay? So you caught me porking, having relations with your old lady, and now we're all feeling just a little bit embarrassed by the whole thing. So, what the hey, man? I mean, I know it's a drag and all, but these things, hey.
Donovan's drawn a gun on Ollie.
We didn't actually have sex. I was depressed. Because I'm impotent, you know? Unable to achieve an erection. That happened for over a year now, man. I need someone to talk to. I mean, think about, man. A year without an erection.
Leave him alone!
Bonnie clobbers Donovan on the head with a gold statue.
You should have seen this coming, you Australian piece of shit!
Bitch, that's my daytime television lifetime achievement award!
Cheesy bastard!
She stabs the award's bronze into his buttocks.
You! Whore!
She legs it, he staggers to his feet.
Oh, crap!
And hops over to shelves full of books, photos, and awards.
Okay.
Searching the shelf, he sweeps everything up.
Fun and games?
He finds a Polaroid camera.
Okay, fun and games!
He limps to the windows.
Blazily.
He takes a snap of Ollie's van. The flash makes him dizzy. Donovan fires his pistol and shatters the bedroom window. Ollie's van takes off, hitting the Jag, which Bonnie's in.
It's my Jag!
Donovan lurches onto the patio and fires down at a departing
Bloody
Bonnie.
Jag! You bitch! 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 Bye-bye, baby!
The Jag speeds off. The gardener stares at him.
Oh, what are you looking at?
Struggling to maintain his balance, Donovan lifts his jacket and twists round to take photos of his wounded buttocks.
Explain this away, darling.
Donovan throws back his head and laughs maniacally as he takes the photos. The screen fades to black. In Victorian Valentine-style graphics, a gold-rimmed heart opens out. Within is a lace-trimmed heart with a cartoon of Cupid, who fires his bow up through a blue sky dotted with white clouds and pink hearts. It passes a flowery banner bearing the name George Clooney. The arrow carries on past a banner with the name Catherine Zeta-Jones on it. Finally, it pierces a pink heart bearing the words Intolerable Cruelty. The heart breaks in two, revealing cherubs mending broken hearts in a field. One cherub hammers on a patch. Other cherubs fire arrows at a heart-shaped target. A pupil cherub makes notes while a teacher cherub, with a stick, points to a blackboard. On the board is the picture of a woman, a plus sign, a man, an equal sign, a bleeding heart with an arrow through it. Jeffrey Rush, Cedric the Entertainer, Edward Herman, Paul Adelstein, Richard Jenkins, and Billy Bob Thornton. Cherubs watch a courting girl in a wood, a couple in medieval dress stand by a tree, the man carved white inside a heart. Lovebirds settle on white plaques with the names Julia Duffy, Jonathan Hadari, Tom Aldridge, Erwin Keyes, Jack Kyle. A cherub with a bow winks as it watches a man creep up on a woman hiding behind a tree. Stacey Travis, Neil Cottage, Kirsten Warren. A courting couple kiss on a bridge. More courting couples from different eras kiss by the riverbank. Casting by Ellen Chenoweth. Supervising sound editor, Skip Leifson. Music by Carter Burwell. Costume designer, Mary Zofras. The moon smiles down from a starry blue sky, casting a huge golden bee. Two cherubs hold a white sash. On it, associate producer Robert Gray. Co-producers John Cameron, Grant Heslov. Editor Roderick James. Director of photography Roger Deakins, ASC, BSc. Executive producers James Jacks, Sean Daniel. A man writes a letter. A cherub delivers it onto a desk on which there's an engagement ring in a box. Produced by Ethan Cohen, Brian Grazer. Story by Robert Ramsey and Matthew Stone and John Romano. Screenplay by Robert Ramsey and Matthew Stone and Ethan Cohen and Joel Cohen. Two cherubs open the letter which has a heart seal. They pull out a document headed Prenuptial Agreement. Ultraviolet light illuminates a set of very white teeth. Fiona's lips are clamped open. He calls his office.
Hey, it's me. Any messages? Just lightning. What else? All right, tell Ann Stiller I'll return in 20 minutes. Get Wrigley to look up Oliphant the Oliphant, Commonwealth of Virginia for his relevance in the Chatham filing. She said she took the kids to Tahoe.
Wait, which side of Tahoe?
Miles is now in his car.
Yeah, well, if the cruise goes all the way around the lake, she's left the state and she's in breach. Tell Wrigley to prepare a filing to attach.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Primary residence, beach house, ski cabin, auto stocks, bonds, dental costs. Huh? Gonna lose you.
Uh-huh.
And tell Fred Armitrading that we finally have pictures of his wife with the oral surgeon. Oh, and get a fruit and pastry basket in the conference room for my 9:30. Didn't have time for breakfast this morning.
Where are you?
Coming at you.
She turns and sees him.
Your 9 o'clock is here, Bonnie Donnelly.
Bonnie Donnelly.
Handsome Miles Massey picks up a powder compact from his PA Doreen's desk and admires his teeth in the mirror before bursting into his office.
Mrs. Donnelly.
Later, Miles, in a smart navy blue suit, stares pensively at Bonnie. Her eyes are tearful, and she's clasping a rumpled, soggy handkerchief. He raises his eyebrows.
Yes, your husband did show remarkable foresight in taking those pictures, and yes, absent a swimming pool, the presence of a pool man would appear to be suspicious. But, madam, who is the real victim here? Let me suggest to you the following. Your husband, on a prior occasion, had slapped you, beat you, I think that word is not inappropriate.
No,
let me finish, please. I'm not concerned with who slapped whom first. Your husband, who had beaten you repeatedly...
No,
please,
he never...
Repeatedly, was at the time brandishing your firearm.
It was his gun.
And we'll get it back for you, trying in his rage to shoot an acquaintance, a friend of long standing.
They never really cared for each other.
And if not for your cool-headed intervention, his tantrum might have ended this schmo's life and ruined his own. As for the sexual indiscretion which he imagined took place, wasn't it in fact he who was sleeping with the pool man?
Bonnie reflects and frowns.
No? Am I going too far here? Were his sexual... No.
I don't...
Sorry, I'm not omniscient. The point is that he acted upon an assumption which he cannot prove, and I take it you deny.
Well...
Fine, I'll take the case. It's imperative that I meet with Oliver Olerud before we proceed any further so that I can massage the kinks out of our testimony.
Do you really think we could put all this across?
The truth is so self-evident to me, Mrs. Donnelly, that I'm sure that I'll be able to make it equally as transparent to any jury. Should your husband decide to take it that far, we'll need to caucus again to draw up a picture of your husband's net worth, a map of enemy territory, so to speak. You said that he's a television producer?
He has a soap opera, The Sands of Time. It's a silly show.
Well, it'll be yours soon. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Thank you,
yeah.
Mr. Massey.
Bye-bye.
He shuts the door. His fake smile fades.
Still, yeah. Admire him for taking those pictures.
Now, Mrs. Gutman, you testified that you were your husband's sexual slave for 36 years during your marriage.
Except for 2 years when he was in the Navy in Southeast Asia.
And before your marriage, what was your profession?
I was a hostess for Braniff Airlines.
And what is your husband's profession?
He manufactures staples and industrial brad tacks. He's very successful.
How would you describe your husband's sexual proclivities?
Well, at first he was a very gentle and tender lover. But then he became more and more fixated...
Miles and his colleague Wrigley are sitting either side of Mr. Gutman.
Can't help it. You don't decide to become bored. It just happens.
You're just in trouble. It's a midlife crisis. Look, get yourself a new car.
I have a new car. I have 2 new cars. I have a tab at the Mercedes dealership. Torn the house down twice. Rebuilt the cabin in Vail. Three of those yard people.
Gardeners.
I've got a man who is my jet.
These encounters were videotaped. Sometimes there would be a gizmo.
A gizmo?
He had a device he called the intruder. It was something he had the engineers at the factory design. And then he had a prototype built out of the parts from our vacuum cleaner.
I see.
So the vacuum cleaner wasn't available to me for several months.
Several months without the appliance.
Yes.
The problem is everyone is willing to compromise. That's the problem with the institution of marriage. It's based on compromise, even through its disillusion. Mrs. Gutman here, she's going to score some points concerning her husband's sexual politics. Naturally, we'll try to impeach. And then the entire process will find an equilibrium point based on the skill of the individual lawyers. And then both parties will go home with their portion of the staple factory.
That's life. Life is compromise.
That's not life. That's death.
They're talking across Gutman.
Struggle and challenge and ultimate destruction of your opponent. That's life. Let me ask you something. Attila the Hun.
Thank you, Mr.
Ivan the Terrible. Henry the Eighth. What do they have in common?
Podgy Gutman looks to Miles.
Middle name?
No, they didn't just win. They destroyed.
Mr. Massey? Again, I ask, have you any questions for the complainant?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I was just consulting with an associate.
Miles rises and buttons up his jacket.
Now, Mrs. Gutman, do you know a man named David Gonzalez?
She looks uneasy.
Well, he's the tennis pro at the club.
The tennis pro? Then why are your letters addressed to him? Dear David and Goliath.
A Mercedes convertible, headlights glaring, careers at high speed on a dark, winding road. Its female passenger is sitting on the back of her seat and with her feet up on the dashboard. A black sedan follows at a respectable distance. Then Merck enters a more built-up area. Holding a bottle in one hand, the passenger in the Merck waves her arms in the air. The car weaves erratically from one side of the wide road to the other and speeds along past a port. The black sedan follows. A neon sign, Malibu Seaside Cab. The INS of cabins isn't lit. The Merc swerves into the parking lot and parks haphazardly.
Cabin 7.
The blonde teeters off. Rex, a big elderly guy, staggers out of the car. The black sedan quietly pulls up in the motel parking lot as Rex drunkenly chases his date into the cabin. He enters to see her skimpy red dress on the floor. Wearing stilettos, the blonde kicks her bare leg out from behind a curtain. Rex's eyes boggle and his mouth pouts. The young woman in red bra and briefs chuffs towards him. Rex tears off his clothes. Heavily built Rex, an unattractive prospect in his vest, boxer shorts and stocking suspenders, sweeps the pretty woman onto his bed and turns out the light. A guy bursts into the room with a video camera. The two are caught in its glaring light.
Oh, I'm gonna nail your ass! Oh, I'm gonna nail your ass!
The lovers duck and dive in vain to get out of the way of the camera. The woman tries to break her face with her dress. Rex gathers his trousers and tries to leg it. In an office, a beautiful young woman with long dark hair watches the evidence her investigator, Gus Peck, has filmed. Occasionally, her eyebrows twitch at the antics.
I'm gonna nail your ass. Yep, I nailed his ass.
Gus picks up the remote.
I thought he'd outgrown trains.
They never grow up, lady. They just get tubby.
How charming. An aphorist.
Oh, yeah, I've always had ample proportions. Believe you me, it's all muscle. It's hard as a rock. I'm not one of cream puffs sit behind the desk private dicks. I'm an ass kneeler.
So I see.
Gym 4 times a week, hour and a half plus stretching. Life cycle, life step, life circuit. These pets don't pussyfoot around.
I must say, for someone in your line of work, you don't exhibit a great deal of tact.
You want tact? Call a tactician. You want an ass kneel? You call Gus Petch. Christ, you seem to be taking it pretty good. I seen them come in here weeping well like Baptists at a funeral. Like they hired me to prove their husbands weren't fooling around.
Don't get me wrong, Mr.
Petch. Gus Petch.
Whilst I don't find this terribly amusing, I am delighted that you found this material. This is going to be my passport to wealth, independence, and freedom.
Sounds like to me, you gonna nail his ass.
Rex tries to unlock the front door of his mansion.
Honey? Honey?
Rex, get away from the door.
He uses the intercom.
Honey? My key doesn't work. Can we talk about this?
Rex, get away from the door.
Oh, look, I know that you're upset, honey.
Rex, for your own safety, get away from the door. I don't like having to set the dogs on you.
Oh, for crying out loud. If we could... dogs?
Two huge black and tan Rottweilers pound through the luxury of his gardens. Rex scarpers to his car, gets in it, and closes the door just in time. One of the dogs leaps against the window, leaving a trail of slather smeared across it. Rex dials his wife on his mobile.
Yes, dogs. I wanted some security since I'll be living here alone.
Look, Marilyn, can't we have a civilized discussion about this?
Our lawyers can.
A dog hurls itself at the windscreen.
You have a discovery hearing at 5:30 for the Maxine Gopnik case.
Discovery?
And a Lance Kelso Gopnik. Called. He read your article about palimony settlements Kelso. And same-sex partnerships and would like to schedule an appointment.
Same-sex.
Arthur Yardumian and his tax attorney want to reschedule their caucus for tomorrow. Arthur had to fly to Atlanta for a deadbeat dad hearing.
Atlanta?
And your 10:30 is here, Rex Rexroth.
Miles turns to Doreen.
Rex Rexroth.
Real estate. He's okay?
She rubs her fingers together and nods for him to go through.
Mr. Rexroth. Call me Rex. Please. Miles Massey, please sit. Relax. Consider this office, your haven, your war room for the duration of the campaign. Thank you.
Now, sir.
Miles looks sympathetic.
Tell me your troubles.
Well, my wife has me between a rock and a hard place.
That's her job. You should respect that.
When I first met Marilyn, we were crazy about each other. Mm. Not emotionally, of course, just we couldn't keep our hands off each other. But then...
Time marches on. Ardor cools.
Yeah. So, we had an understanding.
Whereby?
We could see other people.
Has Mrs. Rexroth pursued the opportunities implicit in your arrangement?
Well, I can only assume.
Not in court, you can. Has she retained counsel?
I don't know. She has Rottweilers.
Not a good sign. And have you yourself exploited your understood freedom.
There's a lady, a young lady. She lets me be myself.
Of course. And your wife is aware and or has evidence?
Video.
Ha! To cut to the chase, forensically speaking, is there a prenup?
Rex starts to speak, but stops. Miles gives him a reprimanding look.
The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves. Let me ask you this. What kind of a settlement do you seek? What are for you the parameters of the possible?
Well, that's the problem. I can't afford to give her anything.
Miles, in a swish leather chair, turns towards Rex and looks at him gravely.
Nothing?
I know that sounds a little rough, but listen, I'm about to close a deal to develop some mini-malls. I am mortgaged up to my hiney. If this deal goes south, I am ruined. I will lose millions.
So you propose that in spite of demonstrable infidelity on your part, your unending wife should be tossed out on her ear?
Well, is that possible?
Rex looks wide-eyed and expectant. Miles swivels in his chair and ponders.
It's a challenge.
Why don't you come out to Malibu and see my new beach house tomorrow? I didn't know Dimitri had a beach house. Neither did I until my lawyer found it. Quite a paper trail. Had it in the dog's name. Huh. Well, tomorrow won't work. I'm having a body wrap. How's Wednesday? Hair appointment in the morning. Afternoon? Shrink. How's your Thursday? I'm having facial injections. That kills Friday and Saturday.
Botox?
Butt fat. Does that really work? You tell me.
Hello, darlings.
Marion joins the three women at a club poolside.
So, you and Rex are...
Well, as my private investigator put it, we're gonna nail his ass.
I've been trying to nail George's ass for years, but he is so careful.
Oh. Ramona's friend chokes on her drink.
Are you all right, Claire?
Down the wrong pipe.
Claire smiles sweetly.
So who's your lawyer?
Freddie Bender. I have an appointment this afternoon with Rex and his schnauzer.
So who's Rex's guy?
Miles Massey.
Miles Massey? Of Massey Meyerson?
Do you know him?
By reputation, and Marilyn, he's no schnauzer. He got Phyllis Rumsey that cute little island of George's. George was so impressed, he hired him when he divorced his second.
Muriel Rumsey.
Who's she?
Now, night manager at McDonald's. But Marilyn, do we have a man for you?
Thorstensen Gieslinson.
He just separated from his third. He's in fish.
He is fish.
Well, he's tuna.
Ladies, I'm not seeing anyone until I've finished nailing Rex's ass.
But Marilyn, this man is tuna.
Sarah, one husband at a time.
Wrigley, Rex, and Miles are in a conference room at Massey Meyerson.
I'll do the talking. I know you'll be tempted to chime in, but remember that you're in an emotionally vulnerable state. I'm the professional.
Miles spots Marilyn.
Okay.
Ready.
They all rise as Freddie and Marilyn enter.
Freddie Bender, this is Rex Rexroth, and you are the lovely Marilyn.
Please, Miss Rexroth. And you must be Mr. Massey.
Please, Miles. Sit down.
Miles gives her a gleaming white smile.
Freddie, I was sorry to hear about the Goldberger Award. Pastry?
Wrigley stifles a giggle.
We did very well.
Freddie turns to Marilyn.
We did very well.
Not to worry, Mrs. Rexroth. You're ably represented. I'm sure Freddie's just too modest to tell you he used to clerk for Clarence Thomas. Pastry, going begging.
Don't try to bait me, Miles. Now, if you have a proposal to make, let's hear it.
Well, at this point, my client is still prepared to consider reconciliation.
Freddie looks to Marilyn, who shakes her head.
My client's ruled that out.
My client is prepared to entertain an amicable dissolution of marriage without prejudice.
That's a fart in a stiff wind.
My client proposes a 30-day cooling-off period.
My client feels sufficiently dispassionate.
My client asks that you not initiate proceedings pending his setting certain affairs in order.
Freddie fakes laughter, followed by Marilyn and Miles.
Oh, what's so goddamn funny?
Please, let me handle this. All right, so much for the icebreakers. What are you after, Freddie?
Mine is prepared to settle for 50% of the marital assets.
Miles spits out the water he's just sipped.
Why only 50, Freddie? Why not 100? While we're dreaming, why not 150? Are you familiar with Kirshner?
Kirshner does not apply.
Bring this to trial. We'll see if Kirshner applies.
What's Kirshner?
Please, let me handle this.
Kirshner was in Kentucky.
Kirshner was in Kentucky?
Kirshner was in Kentucky.
All right, Freddie, forget Kirshner. What's your bottom line?
Primary residence, 30% of remaining assets.
What are you, nuts? Have you forgotten Kirshner?
Freddie angrily packs his briefcase.
Freddie, it's a negotiation.
You have the preliminary.
Freddie, we're all friends here. It's a negotiation. Hey, Freddy, fine. We'll eat the pastry.
Marilyn looks intrigued by Miles. She and Freddie leave. Miles' eyes meet hers as she passes the conference room window and gives him a lingering look.
I thought that went well.
Gus Petch and his chums are sitting drinking beer and watching one of his video surveillance tapes. Bowls full of snacks are on the table in front of the guys as they watch a woman lock a door and approach a man by a photocopier.
Let's go back to the football game.
Oh, kiss my ass.
Now, this halftime, man, this is some good shit.
I'm about to nail his ass right here.
Oh, Gus, go back to the Rabinowitz tape again.
Oh, hold on now. Now, here come the good part. Look at this. She about to take off her panties.
Oh, yeah, come on.
Gus!
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Miles Massey.
Take a number.
It's about a job tonight.
God damn it.
Miles is sitting in a plush restaurant at night. The light is subdued and the glasses and cutlery shine invitingly. Miles, his short dark hair neatly parted on one side, surreptitiously looks at himself in the cutlery. He bares his teeth and checks out his distorted reflection in the back of a spoon.
Here we are.
The maitre d' arrives with his guest.
Ms. Rexroth, I am so delighted you decided to come.
Well, I must admit I was curious.
Something to start. Some wine, perhaps?
Red?
French?
Bordeaux?
Chateau Margaux?
57.
59.
54.
Mr. Massey.
Good, sir.
Your husband had told me you were the most beautiful woman that he'd ever met. I didn't expect the most beautiful woman I'd ever met.
Marilyn smiles dubiously.
Dismiss your vows, your feigned tears, your flattery. For where a heart is hard, they make no battery.
Miles thinks for a moment.
Whoever loved, that loved not at first sight.
Now, you didn't ask me here to pick me up. You could be disbarred.
Maybe I'm reckless.
What was your performance about this afternoon?
What did your lawyer say?
Oh, Freddie thinks you're a buffoon. He says you've been too successful, you're bored, complacent, and you're on your way down.
But you don't think so.
How do you know?
Why would you be here?
Why did you ask me?
Can't I be curious?
About what?
Do you ever answer questions?
To you?
A menu.
I'll have the tornadoes of beef, the lady will have the same. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The waiter goes.
I assume you're a carnivore.
Oh, Mr. Massey, you have no idea.
Miles, please, tell me more about yourself.
All right, Miles. Let me tell you everything that you need to know. You may think you're tough, but I eat men like you for breakfast. I've invested 5 good years in my marriage to Rex, and I've nailed his ass fair and square. Now I'm going to have it stuffed, mounted, and have my lady friend come over and throw darts at it.
Man-hater, huh?
She shrugs coolly.
People don't go on safaris because they hate animals.
So it's just for the hunt, with the trophy at the end.
No, nothing so frivolous.
She leans forward.
This divorce means money. Money means independence. That's what I'm after.
Their eyes are locked.
What are you after, Miles?
I'm a lot like you. Just looking for an ass to mount.
She fixes him with sultry eyes.
Well done.
Captivated, Miles smiles at her with gleaming brown eyes. Night, a pair of feet in trainers. Gloved hands reach down to touch the toes. Gus is doing stretching exercises in a dark room. Standing up straight, Gus rotates his head and breathes deeply. He twitches his nose, hesitantly reaches for a doorknob with RR on it, and opens the door. Wearing a headband and tracksuit, chubby Gus pounds down the driveway of Rex's mansion. The Rottweilers are in hot pursuit as Gus makes for a high wrought iron gate. He climbs to the top with a dog snapping at his heels.
I gotcha. See this?
Oh dear. The gates swing open, letting the dogs either side. Gus's smile fades. Wrigley and Miles are at a table in a diner. Wrigley winces when he sees the slop being served up to other diners. A waitress approaches.
Yeah.
She's big and butch.
I'll just have a salad, please. Baby field greens.
She glares at him.
What did you call me?
I didn't call you anything.
You want a salad?
Yeah, do you have a green salad?
What the fuck color would it be?
Why are we eating him?
What's his problem?
Just bring him an iceberg lettuce and a mealy tomato wedge smothered with French dressing.
And for you?
Ham sandwich on stale rye bread. Lots of mayo, easy on the ham.
Slock up?
What the hell?
Hello, Marge.
Who are you, Gus?
He sits with Miles and Wrigley.
Okay. Now, my mind knocks to the address book. Don't call me anymore for this penny ante shit. I shoot action, me and the Ikigami, Jack.
Thank you, Gus.
And those Rottweilers were a menace, man.
I told you she had dogs.
Yeah. You ain't tell me they had a hard-on for Anus Africanus.
Miles takes a roll of film.
Did you see any evidence, any telltale signs of indiscretion on the part of Mrs. Rexroth?
What are you talking about? Telltale signs? Look, I see her ass, I nail it. I don't sneak around, snip sheets. God damn it, I'm Gus Pitch.
Leaving the diner.
Couldn't you be disbarred for that?
Oh, I don't think so. Maybe if I'd had the patty melt.
You had a guy break into her house and photograph her address book.
No, Wrigley. I happened to let a man know that I was interested in her address book. That's not criminal. I also happened to let him know that I was taking her out to dinner. That's not a crime either. No, I don't see myself as culpable in any sense. You, on the other hand, could be disbarred for developing and examining these photos of her address book. But that doesn't really concern me.
Right. Who are you looking for?
Tenzing Norgay.
Tenzing Norgay. That's someone she's with.
I doubt it. Tenzing Norgay was the Sherpa that helped Edmund Hillary climb Mount Everest.
And Meryl knows him.
No, you idiot. Not the Tenzing Norgay. Her Tenzing Norgay.
I'm not sure that I actually follow
Few
that.
Few great accomplishments are achieved single-handedly, Wrigley. Most have their Norgays. Marilyn Rexroth is even now climbing her Everest. I want to find her Norgay.
But how do you determine which of the people on here are...
How do you spot a Norgay?
Yeah.
You start with the people with the funny names.
Hey, Family Court of 5th District, Los Angeles County, now in session. The Honorable Marva Munson presiding. All rise.
The court rises. Judge Marva Munson enters and heads for the bench. Rex, standing between Miles and Wrigley, turns anxiously to Miles.
Have you sat before her before? No, no. The judge sits first, then we sit.
Well, have you sat after her before?
Sat after her before? You mean have we argued before her before? The judge sits in judgment. The counsel argues before the judge.
So have you argued before her before?
Before her before or before she sat before?
Before her before. I said before her before.
No, you said before she sat before.
Well, I did it first.
Look, then don't argue.
I'm not. I'm...
You don't argue. We argue.
Counsel argues.
You appear.
The judge sits.
Then you sit.
Or you stand in contempt.
And then we argue.
Counsel argues.
Which you've done before.
Which we've done before.
But not before her.
At the sound of the gavel, everyone sits, except Rex.
Rex, sit!
Later, in a darkened courtroom, everyone's watching the video of Rex. The judge looks askance at her TV set. Rex shuffles uncomfortably as he watches the set in front of him, Miles and Wrigley. Marilyn and Freddie watch their set. Marilyn sobs dramatically into a hanky. Marilyn's sobbing in the witness box. Freddie, hands clasped in front of him, waits sympathetically.
Devastated. Simply devastated.
Thank you, Mrs. Rexroth.
Balding Freddie nods somberly and goes back to his seat.
Mr. Massey, any questions?
Miles gets up and slowly approaches the witness box. There's a cunning glint in his eye as he fixes Marilyn with a steady gaze. Marilyn, demurely dressed in a pink and white outfit and with her hair drawn sensibly back off her face, meets Miles's gaze cautiously, then snuffles into her handkerchief. He studies her sardonically. She gives him another wary glance, lowers her hanky, and faces him with sad, tear-filled eyes. He begins to pace in front of her.
Dismiss your vows, your feigned tears, your flattery, for where a heart is hard, they make no battery. Mrs. Rexroth, do you know those lines?
Objection, Your Honor.
Grounds?
Poetry recitation.
Let me rephrase. Mrs. Rexroth, how high is that wall around your heart?
Your Honor, this is harassment. And frankly, it's still a little, arty-farty.
Rephrase. Mrs. Rexroth, have you ever been in love?
Yes, of course.
She looks away and her lip trembles.
With Rex.
And you've always loved him?
Whoever loved that loved not at first sight.
Miles is about to speak, but stops and gapes briefly at the weeping Marilyn.
So it's your sworn testimony that you have loved Rex Rexroth since first you met.
He walks away, then dramatically turns back to her.
Yes.
Marilyn's face is racked with emotion.
Thank you.
Miles returns to his seat.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Who's next, Mr. Bender?
We rest, Your Honor.
Mr. Massey?
Your Honor, I call Heinz the Baron Krauss von Espy.
Heinz the Baron Krauss von Espy.
Heinz the Baron Krauss von Espy.
Marilyn sits down looking shocked. Freddie leans into her.
Heinz the Baron Krauss von Espy.
Lindsay Norgay.
The balding, bespectacled Wrigley, somewhere in his 30s, mumbles to himself smugly. The Baron, a small, foppish man, enters the courtroom with an arrogant smile on his face. He carries a Pomeranian dog on his arm. The bailiff greets him with a raised hand and holds out a Bible. The Baron raises his hand and places the dog's paw on the Bible.
Mr. Kraus, do you solemnly swear that...
Kraus von Espy.
Kraus von Espy, do you solemnly
swear... Baron Kraus von Espy.
Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, all truth, nothing but truth, so help you God.
May bien sûr.
No maybes.
May bien sûr. But of course, yes, the Baron does not lie.
Have a seat, sir.
Freddy whispers to Marilyn.
Just sleep with him. Don't be a fool.
Shush, Elzbieta. Shush, shush, shush.
Miles.
Baron von Espy, what is your profession?
Silly man, I am a Baron.
Yes, but do you not also hold a day job? Paying job, a square job.
Well, one has to live. I am the concierge of Les Pantalons Rouges at Bad Godesburg in the canton of Uri.
And what does that job entail?
I satisfy such requests as the clientele may present.
Towels, ice, etc.
We are bellmen for that. No, no, no. Such requests that were you at home, you would address not to your valet, but to your majordomo.
I see. Baron, do you recognize that woman?
Oh, cher Marilyn, but of course, look who is here.
The Baron waves the dog's paw at Marilyn.
And she was a guest of the red trousers.
She glares.
Oh, many times. For relaxing and making alpine recreation.
Miles eyes her.
Mm-hmm. I am curious about her visit of 5 years ago, January 1998. Can you remember any specific requests she made at that time?
Yes, I can.
And what, at that time, did she tell you she required?
She said that she required a husband.
Marilyn looks up in horror. Rex is shocked.
Do you want some bones? Huh? Does Elzbieta want some bones? Has anyone any bones?
Does anyone have any bones? Bones? Dog candies?
No, they are not candies. Milk bones. Hard, crunchy bones for the teeth.
The judge motions for Miles to proceed.
We'll attend to the dog later. Now, Baron...
Miles stops and thinks.
Where were we?
An elderly red-headed court reporter reads a transcript.
She said that she required a husband. Oh, do you want some bones? Does Elzbieta want some bones? Has anyone any bones? Hard, crunchy bones
right.
For the...
Now, a husband. That's an unusual request. Did she specify what kind of a husband she was looking for?
Stop. Objection.
Grounds?
Hearsay.
Not secondhand, Your Honor. This is direct testimony about the Baron's own conversation.
I'm going to allow it.
She said she wanted a very rich husband. She wanted to know the businesses and the wealths. The wealths, can I say this? Wealths of our various eligible guests.
And did she have any other specification?
Objection, Your Honor. Inflammatory.
What's good for the gander, Your Honor?
Is this a legal argument, what's good for the gander?
You got to play your tape, Freddy.
Mr. Massey has a point there. I'm going to allow it.
Were there any other specifications?
She specificated a silly man.
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow
she
it.
She specificated a man who, though clever at making money, would be easily duped and controlled.
Objection, Your Honor.
Shut up, Freddy. She's allowing it.
She specificated a man with a wandering peepee. How you say? A philanderer whose affairs would be transparent to the world.
Objection, Your
Finally,
Honor.
Finally, a man whom she could herself brazenly hold until such time as she might choose to, say fair and coup de maptos or the fess, you would say make hammer on his fanny.
Your Honor, objection, irrelevant.
I'm going to allow it.
Tell us, Baron, did you introduce her to such a man?
Sir, I am the concierge.
And to whom did you introduce that calculating woman?
I introduced her to that silly man.
Your Honor, objection.
Let the record show that the Baron has identified Rex Rexroth as the... Man.
I did it. It was I introduced her to that silly man.
You son of a bitch.
Red Fez, angry one. I introduced them.
Rex wildly scrabbles over the table in front of him.
I just love trains. I love trains.
Rex leaps into the witness box and starts to throttle the Baron.
Sick. You're the one. Sick.
The Baron clings onto Elzbieta as Rex flings him from side to side.
Objection, Your Honor. Strangling the witness.
I'm going to allow it.
Marilyn arrives at Sarah's mansion.
Well, I think it stinks. They left you with nothing. Makes you wonder about the entire legal system. Like Rodney. What's his name?
They bought Massey's argument. If I lied and cheated and was with Rex only for his money, then he shouldn't have to give me any.
Well, that makes no sense. Why else would you put in all those years? Oh!
Sarah leans against a wall.
All right, Sarah.
Yeah.
What is it?
Peptic ulcer. I have medication, but I can't take it before elective surgery.
Sitting by the swimming pool.
You shouldn't be living here alone, Sarah.
My goddamn husband's gave me the ulcer.
But a bottle of bromo can't love you back.
Yeah. It's a catch-22. I have to admit, I don't like living alone. I mean, do I need 46 rooms?
You could see people.
It's risky. Palimony. Son of a bitch, Marvin Mitchelson. I'm telling you, honey, getting laid is financial Russian roulette.
She eyes her muscular gardener.
Maybe I should just tear it all down. Build a cottage. More landscaping.
The handsome, long-haired gardener grins at her as he clips a hedge.
Well, with my money, I can't afford to be found. And besides, I have you. It'll be fun. Just the girls.
Well, thanks, Sarah. But I can't sleep on your couch forever. I'm going to marry again. Nail the guy's ass good. And this time there'll be no puffy Von Espy.
Wearing a white suit and shades, Marilyn swings a white cylindrical handbag as she strides down a seedy alley in daylight. Using the tip of her stiletto-heeled sandals, she taps the foot of a wino asleep in garbage.
Knock, knock. Excuse me, Mr. Donnelly. Mr. Donnelly? Mr. Donnelly, excuse me.
The tattered Donnelly stirs.
You are Donovan Donnelly?
I'm in a meeting.
Mr. Donnelly, I need a name.
Miles is looking out of his office window and thinking. He clicks his mouth. Into a dictaphone.
And of course we will have to litigate sentence paragraph.
He thinks again.
Naturally, the first concern for both parties is the welfare of little Wendell Jr. Nevertheless, we do question whether the continuing expenses for his special ed classes are truly justified, given the great strides.
Mr. Massey, the senior partner would like to see you.
Shocked, Miles responds on the intercom.
Herb wants to see me?
If you have a moment.
Miles looks perplexed, and his eyes flit from side to side. Miles is sitting in the plush waiting room to Herb's office. Elegant antique chairs are dotted round the highly polished wood-panelled walls. A soft light is provided by lamps. Miles edgily flicks through magazines and law journals on a table. He pulls out a magazine at random, looks around tensely, then examines the cover. It's called Living Without Intestines. He opens it and winces. As if walking down into hell, Miles nervously descends the steps into Herb's dark office.
14 summary judgments. What? 13 granite. 18 movements to void for respondents' prejudice. 18 granted. 12 court days on our expert case alone.
Herb has an oxygen tube.
320 billable hours. Paralegal services. 680 billable at full attorney rate.
The old man puts a hand to his forehead.
85 lunches charged.
Herb, an oxygen line attached to his nostrils, laughs wheezily, stops, then staggers to his feet. Hook-nosed and bespectacled, he lurches forward across his desk. Shadows fall on Miles's face. His eyes are wide and panic-stricken. Herb's trembling hand reaches out. Miles reaches out. Herb grabs his hand to shake it.
Counselor.
Herb's bulging eyes stare.
You are the engine that drives this volume.
Miles is back in his office.
Please, no calls. I'm feeling a little fragile.
I'm sorry, Mr. Massey, but I felt certain you'd want to know. Marilyn Rexroth wants to see you.
Marilyn? When did she...
She's here now.
Is she armed? Give me a minute.
He opens a bathroom cabinet and takes out a bottle of Scope mouthwash. He puts the bottle back and closes the mirror door, then pops a toothy grin.
Marilyn, how nice of you to...
He smooths his hair.
Marilyn, shame on you. Marilyn, what a lovely surprise.
He rubs his incisors at his office door.
Marilyn, what a pleasure. Who the hell are you?
Hello, Miles. So nice of you to see us.
Marilyn's accompanied by a man in a Stetson.
May I introduce Howard D. Doyle of Doyle Oil?
I'm goddamn pleased to meet you. Marilyn here, she says you're the best. Says you're aces.
Well, thank you, Mr. Any relation to John D. Doyle of Doyle Oil?
Oh, you must be talking about Grandpa John. My pop is John D. too, the deuce we called him. You know, kind of rebel of the family, but they knocked off that whole John D. routine when they christened little old yours truly here. Grandpa nearly had a stroke. He did have a stroke, but that was later during the labor activity in 52. The government stepped in. They called it mediation. Well, he called it incipient communism, you know, and of course that's when he had his stroke. But golly, the whole left side of his body is useless as tits on a boar hog. He lingered in a vegetative state
for
years.
Well, that is fascinating, Mr. Doyle. What say we have a seat?
Seat? Yeah, Marilyn's had me running up down Rodeo Drive all day long, kind of hit and run shopping, you know, take no prisoners, force march kind of thing. And my God, my dogs are barking. We started out at this little old place right off of Wilshire
there. It's been quite a day.
That pewter thing.
But anyway, Miles, I know you're busy and you're charged by the hour, so I'll get straight to the point. Howard D. and I are planning to marry.
Miles is stunned. Smiling, Marilyn bites her bottom lip.
Well, I suppose that congratulations are in order.
Well, thank you, Miles. You know, the urge to wedlock and form a lasting monogamous bond, sanctified by ritual, it's pretty near universal. As a matter of fact, it might be of some interest to you, being in a related business. Even you indigenous Americans, I believe it was your Cree, used to slip off in the wigawack.
Here, because I've learned through bitter experience that when it comes to matrimony and law, you are the very... And as you are well aware, my previous marriage ended in an unjustified stain upon my reputation. My motives were impugned. I was slandered in court. I was painted a harlot.
Oh, honey, you ain't no harlot.
Oh, yes, honey. So it's my desire to remove any trace of suspicion from the mind of my dear Howard Doyle.
Oh, honey, come.
I wish to execute a prenuptial agreement.
And I'm dead set against it. I mean, just anti the whole deal.
Howard's lawyers prefer it. I insist upon it.
Oh, damn lawyers. No offense to the present company. You know.
Now, is it my understanding that the Massey prenup has never been penetrated?
That is correct. Not to blow my own horn, but they devote an entire semester to it at Harvard Law.
Now, they got a hell of a school up there. Ain't no doubt about it. We donated that Doyle building up here a while back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I myself went to Texas A&M. I'm an Aggie.
Business?
Tight end. And I had a fair amount of success against the split T defense. You see, when they line up symmetrical that way, it allows me to button hook and, you know, do a down and in, up and out, and different things, post pattern every now and then. You know, tight ends don't really.
Just.
Generally run a post. But if QB calls, the hell, I'm ready.
Interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that you both understand what it is you're asking. The Massey prenup provides that in the event of a dissolution of the marriage, for any reason, both parties will leave it with what they brought in and earned during. No one can profit from the marriage. The prenup protects the wealthier party. Without it, that party is exposed. A sitting duck.
Not a hell of a lot of romance in that.
No, sir, there is not. No romance. More to the point, no wiggle room. So, are we sure that this is what we want?
Absolutely. It's my gift to Howard, for his peace of mind. Whether or not he's worried about it at this moment.
Oh, honey pot, do I look worried?
He grins goofily. In a corridor outside, the pair are about to kiss.
Excuse me, Mr. Doyle, could I just borrow your charming fiancé for a moment?
Okay. You gonna leave a deposit?
Miles pins Marilyn to a wall.
What are you up to?
Something you won't understand, Miles. Howard and I are very much in love.
I don't know what you're thinking, but I have to warn you. The Massey prenup has never been penetrated. You signed the prenup. You can't get his money.
Thanks for the professional help.
Marilyn, think of me for a moment. Not as an attorney, but as a friend.
Does that mean you won't be charging us for the hour?
Dump him. You can't nail his ass.
Is that all?
No, that's not all.
Miles leans in and plants a lingering kiss on her mouth, which Marilyn doesn't resist. Miles pulls back and stares in wide-eyed wonderment at her. Marilyn slowly opens her smoldering eyes and blinks woozily at him, then swallows and delicately licks her bottom lip.
I could have you disbarred for that.
It was worth it.
He looks earnest.
A romantic divorce attorney.
Miles searches her face with his eyes. Smiling gently, Marilyn walks off.
You fascinate me.
Miles on his mobile at a tennis court.
I'll get right on. I'll whip something up. All right. Thank you.
Wrigley's seated.
How's Lionel?
He's fine. He asked me to deliver the keynote address at this year's convention in Vegas.
That's quite an honor.
I suppose.
On top of a great victory.
What was that?
Rex Rexroth? He kept everything? You win, no compromise? Isn't that what you wanted?
Miles lets out a sigh.
Oh, good God, Miles. What are you looking for?
I don't know.
He turns to Wrigley, who's sitting level with the net.
Okay, I won.
Miles ducks.
What then? How many cases has Herb Meyerson won?
The old man more than anybody. He's a legend.
And look at him. He's 87 years old. He's the first one into the office in the morning. No home life.
Who needs a home when you have a colostomy bag?
She can't really love this dope, can she?
Who? Who loves who?
Marilyn Rexroth. She signed a prenup for an oil millionaire.
A Massey prenup?
Miles looks down.
Yeah.
Well then, she is not after his money.
Raising his eyebrows.
Only love is in mind if the Massey is signed.
Miles grimaces. Wrigley nods sagely, then sips from a bottle. A wedding ceremony in the grounds of a mansion. A priest playing a guitar walks up the aisle. Wrigley, sitting next to Miles, struggles to contain himself.
April, come she will, when streams are ripe and swelled with rain. Nay, she will stay, resting in my arms again.
Smiling cheesily, Father Scott steps up into an open-sided gazebo adorned with flowers and faces Marilyn and Howard, she in a white dress and he a grey suit. Wrigley's weepy.
What the hell's wrong with you?
April, come she will.
Bearded Father Scott beams at the bride and groom and the congregation behind him.
Thank you for coming to this celebration of the love between our two friends, Marilyn and Howard. In today's cynical world, it's so hard to take that great leap of faith aboard the ship of love and caring. But today, Marilyn and Howard are taking that leap and telling us, their friends,
Wrigley,
that they do believe, that they do have faith, that they do love. Do you, Howard Drexler Doyle, take Marilyn to be your shipmate on this journey through life? Gale in doldrum, seas choppy, wild, and calm.
Yes, I do, Father Scott.
And do you, Marilyn Rexroth, take Howard to be your shipmate and companion to ports of every clime, be it in first class or steerage?
Miles frowns.
I do.
Then, by the power vested in me by the state of California, and as captain of the good ship Amor Veritas, I now pronounce you man and wife.
He grins happily and the newly married couple kiss on the lips. Howard turns to the congregation and shakes his grey steps in the air. Miles frustratedly adjusts his tie. Emotional, Wrigley claps. Afterwards, Wrigley approaches Miles and proudly shows him a box containing two large silver spoons.
What do you think?
What are they? Ladles?
Berry spoons.
Spoons.
Berry spoons. Everybody has spoons.
And nobody needs berry spoons.
Why, everybody eats berries?
You mean Pollyanna?
Hey, everybody! Folks!
What'd you see him in?
Hey, y'all.
Martha Stewart catalog right next to the silver napkin rings?
I need your attention for a minute.
Stadium seat ass warmers? Dear God, Wrigley, how many
cockamamie
personal possessions
girls,
do we have to amass?
Why so angry? Now, I know it's not common practice for the groom to give his bride a gift on their wedding day. But ever since I met Marilyn there, I can't seem to quit giving her things. And I don't want to stop, because it feels so darn good. Chelsea, bring that barbecue sauce here, little buddy. There you go. Put that thing on my neck now.
A napkin.
Now, honey, it's like a padre said. I want love and trust between us. Love and trust and not a thing else. And this here deed that I'm fixing to perform?
Howard nods and takes some folded paper from his jacket pocket.
Well, honey, let me just do it.
He unfolds it and tears off one sheet.
You see this?
He rips pieces off the sheet, scrunches them up, and dips him in the gravy boat of barbecue sauce the chef bought for him. He eats the paper.
Those are for you, darling. This here is for you. This here is for you, baby. Every last little speck of it. I love you. I mean, I love you like a son of a bitch.
Marilyn beams.
I trust you. This here is for you, baby.
Really?
Baby, this is you.
Listen,
I really love you.
It's the prenup.
I love her. I trust her. Ladies and gentlemen,
prenup.
I trust her. Brilliant.
Miles applauds. Howard grins at Marilyn, who blows him a kiss. Later.
Ladies, you'll excuse us. We have to talk. I would like to offer my congratulations. It was a beautiful gesture of Howard's.
Well, Howard is a beautiful person. Diamond in the rough.
And I have a feeling that someday soon, you'll be taking that diamond and leaving the rough.
In a month or so, once I've established that I've tried to make the marriage work.
May I offer my services?
Oh, thanks. But no. No, I'm retaining Freddie Bender. Poor Freddie was awfully blue after my last divorce.
Well, I admire your loyalty. To lawyers, anyway. I guess without the prenup, it's something that even Freddie could manage. But how did you get Howard to do it? It felt like it was his idea.
Surely, Mr. Massey, you've addressed enough juries to appreciate the power of suggestion.
Miles gazes lustfully at her, then looks round, hearing the guitar being played.
Look, now that the marriage is winding down, have dinner with me.
No. No, nothing doing until the ink is dry on the settlement.
Oh, this will be no settlement. If I know Marilyn Rexroth, this will be nothing short of a complete and total...
She raises her eyebrows.
Annihilation.
They share a knowing smile. A caption, 6 months later. A blue, red and silver American Airlines plane cruises through the blue sky above the clouds. Miles sits reading in a wide, comfortable leather chair in first class, the seat beside him empty. A stewardess brings him a drink.
You're gonna win.
Excuse me?
I can always tell, going to Vegas, who's gonna win.
Well, thanks, but I'm going on business. I always win.
He grins.
Yeah!
Las Vegas at dusk. A giant illuminated sign reads, Caesars welcomes NAMAN, National Organization of Matrimonial Attorneys Nationwide. Miles plays slot machine. Wrigley collects the winnings.
You know why I hate this town, Wrigley? You see, people get to Las Vegas, and all of a sudden the rules of the moral universe don't apply. God is dead, all things are possible. I saw an ad in the paper. No fault divorce. 2-week divorce without a lawyer. Made me sick to my stomach. No fault divorce. Good God. Talk about your oxymoron. What's the world coming to?
One man can only do so much.
Man. What are you talking about? Freddie.
Freddie Bender.
I had lunch with Freddie Bender yesterday. He tells me that Marilyn Rexroth Doyle is now richer than Croesus.
Ah, yes, but is she richer than Mrs. Croesus?
She could buy and sell you 10 times over.
Miles spots Marilyn.
My God, is that her?
Freddie said she was flying in with him, celebrating, I guess.
I'm fascinated by that creature. Richer than me. Well, she deserves every penny. And now she's single again.
She has a boodle.
Excuse me.
You should stay away from her, Miles.
Yeah!
Recite your keynote address! Like a cold shower!
Miles scampers across the casino, dodging two men, and nips into an elevator behind Marilyn. They lean against the back wall.
You're looking well, Marilyn.
Hello, Miles.
Obscene wealth becomes you.
I should have known you'd be here.
Be here? I'm the keynote speaker.
Oh, nice for you.
Nailing your spouse's assets.
Excuse me?
My speech.
Oh, I'm sure you'll bring the house down.
That's an easy crowd. At this point, I would think you're probably the only person that I can't teach anything to.
Really?
Now, correct me, but since by now the ink must be dry, I believe I have the right to collect. You promised to have dinner with me once you were free.
I said I wouldn't whilst I wasn't, which implies no promise once I am.
Noted. Let me rephrase. I would be delighted. Honored, really, if you...
Poodle has his hand.
Howard!
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 You named him after your ex.
I'm sentimental. Well, I'm free this evening, so I suppose a little dinner would do no harm.
The Veuve Clicquot-Ponsardin, 1990, sir.
Yes. Thank you. I'll take care of it.
Miles pause.
Marilyn, this is a moment to savor. Yes, we were adversaries, but we were also professionals. So let us raise a glass to friendship.
They raise their champagne flutes.
To victory.
They both sip their champagne. Miles watches Marilyn, who looks away.
So? How does it feel?
Sorry?
Victory. Independence.
Oh. Well, frankly, Miles...
Not everything you'd hope for.
Marilyn raises her eyebrows. Miles gives an understanding nod and stares at the table.
I know the feeling.
Independence. Two-edged sword. My friend, my best friend, Sarah Sorkin.
Miles cocks his head.
Sarah Batista O'Flanagan Sorkin.
The O'Flanagan settlement?
Marilyn eyes him deliberately. He frowns.
Anyway, three fine settlements, more money than she could ever hope to spend.
Yes.
Her vaunted independence.
Don't tell me. She sits around the house, afraid to see people, afraid to put a portfolio into play.
And only a peptic ulcer to keep her warm at night.
Yes.
Miles stares at her.
There's a certain point when you've achieved your goals.
You realize that you're still not satisfied.
Yes.
Miles lowers his eyes. Marilyn looks down gloomily. Raising his brows with weary resignation, Miles toys with his champagne glass.
We should order.
You know, I'm not really hungry.
Neither am I.
Miles stares at the table, then slowly reaches out his fingers and touches Marilyn's clenched hand. She responds, pushing her hand under his palm. Later, they stand against the back wall of an elevator, with their arms pressed rigidly to their sides, standing a few feet apart and staring at the carpeted floor. In a hotel corridor, Marilyn turns to an adoring Miles, who tries to speak. Marilyn puts a finger to Miles' lips, then turns and swaggers off down another corridor. Miles watches her with a pathetically smitten stare, and his shoulders droop as he sighs. In his unlit office, Herb Meyerson is hooked up to numerous intravenous drips, one of which is green.
1,800 billable hours. 1,221 motions to void. 564 summary judgments. 129,999 charged.
Miles springs up in bed, panting in the dark, a sweaty sheen to his skin. Soft light suffuses the room, and Miles stares bemusedly at the phone on the bedside cabinet before answering it, eyes bulging.
Oh.
Miles?
Hello, Marilyn?
Sarah Sorkin just died.
Miles bursts into Marilyn's room.
Marilyn.
Elsa?
In a dressing gown, Miles kneels by her bed.
Perforated. Miles?
Yes, ma'am.
She was alone. She'd been dead for 2 days before a Pilates instructor found her.
Marilyn, listen to me. No arguments, no discussions. I'll have Rick meet us at the wee kirk of the Heather.
Still at night, a taxi drops them off outside a lit-up wedding chapel. They hurry in.
Wrigley! The vials are from an Arapaho dawn greeting ceremony. The music is Simon and Garfunkel. And this is the Massey prenup.
You the two getting married?
It's Mr. McKinnon here. We'll be officiating. Sorry, short notice.
Ben, Marilyn, you're welcome to examine this. This is the Massey prenup. As you know, it's ironclad. We reach Freddie Bender to have him here for your protection, but we couldn't find him.
Are you two here to get married or to bullshit?
So you can't hope to benefit from marriage?
Not in any way.
And my wealth is completely, completely protected?
As if a lead veil had been drawn across it.
Marilyn gazes affectionately at Miles, then signs the document. Wrigley sobs. Marilyn puts a hand to Miles's face.
Do you still want to marry me?
More than ever.
They're about to kiss when Mr. McKinnon leans in.
Have you written kilts?
Mr. McKinnon stands at the far end of a rather tweed wood-panelled chapel, its pews empty. Next to him are Miles and Wrigley, both in Highland outfits. In a simple white dress, Marilyn pads smoothly up the aisle, touching a posy of flowers, and joins Miles.
Do you, Miles, Longfellow Massey of Massey, Myerson, Sloan and Goralnik, LLP, take Marilyn Hamilton Rexroth Doyle to be your lawful wedded wife?
I do, yes, I do.
Let me finish. Jesus, have you never been married before? To have and to hold, to love and to cherish till death do you part.
Miles looks from McKinnon to Marilyn.
I do.
And do you, Marilyn Hamilton Rexroth Doyle, take Miles Longfellow Massey to be your lawful wedded husband, to have and to hold, to love and to cherish till death do you part?
I do.
I now pronounce ye man and wife.
Miles and Marilyn turn their shoulders to face each other, then, closing their eyes, drift in close and kiss tenderly on the lips. A little startled, Miles turns his face and frowns as a piper in Highland costume comes marching up the aisle, kicking out his leg with each step. The image of the bonneted piper is replaced by a luxurious honeymoon suite, furnished in a Roman style, with a high ceiling and enormous window overlooking nighttime Las Vegas. At the centre of the room sits a large circular bed. A bellhop opens the door.
I'll take care of you later.
Miles, still wearing the Highland outfit, carries Marilyn into the suite. He lets her flop onto the bed, then dives in and kisses her. She wraps her arms around his neck.
No. This is all wrong.
Miles splutters in confusion, then stares wide-eyed.
Is it a kilt?
Do you love me?
More than anything.
Can I trust you?
Yes, you can trust me.
He gazes earnestly at Marilyn, who reaches out and grabs the prenup, tearing it in two. She flings the pieces away, opening her arms out wide.
Darling, you're exposed.
Sitting duck.
Miles lowers himself hungrily onto Marilyn, and they kiss passionately. Behind the bed, a marble statue of baby Cupid aiming his arrow of love at the pair. In a grand hall, a thick-jowled suited man stands at a wooden podium on stage.
I hereby declare the 12th Congress of the National Organization of Matrimonial Attorneys nationwide open. As our first order of business, it is a privilege to call to the podium our keynote speaker from the Los Angeles firm of Massey, Meyerson, Sloan, and Gorulnik, a man whose name is synonymous with bitter disputes and big awards, Miles Massey.
The secretary stands back and claps with the audience of suited men and women who sit in rows facing the stage. He then takes a seat at a desk. Shirt top button open, Miles rises from another desk and steps uncertainly up to the podium beneath a banner with the slogan, "Let no man put us under."
Thank you, Blanca.
Puffing on a cigarette, the secretary acknowledges him with a finger salute.
In the world of...
He shoots a look at the audience, then stares down at his speech.
In the world of matrimonial law, there are...
Miles peers out at the delegates, each of whom is wearing a name badge. They sit perfectly still. Miles frowns at his speech.
In the world of matrimonial law, there are multiple tactics.
He looks at the next page of his speech and shakes his head, smiling wryly to himself. The secretary and two other men watch him uneasily. Miles gathers up his speech and, staring into the audience, tears it in two. The secretary frowns in puzzlement and sits up a little.
Friends, this morning I stand before you a very different Miles Massey than the one that addressed you last year on the disposition of marital assets following murder/suicide. I wish to talk to you today not about technical matters of law. I wish to talk to you about something more important.
He momentarily retreats into himself.
I wish to talk to you from the heart.
This comment elicits no response whatsoever. Miles stares dreamily into space.
Because today, for the first time in my life, I stand before you naked.
His eyes dart about the hall.
Vulnerable.
Miles nods soberly and breathes a deep sigh. He raises his eyebrows.
And in love.
The conference delegates turn to one another. The secretary casts a dubious sideways glance at them.
Love. It's a word we matrimonial lawyers avoid. Funny, isn't it? We're frightened of this emotion, which is, in a sense, the seed of our livelihood. Well, today, Miles Massey is here to tell you that love need cause us no fear. Love need cause us no shame. Love is good.
A bespectacled man in the audience knits his brow and glances skeptically at his neighbor.
Love is good.
A balding delegate shifts uncomfortably in his seat.
Now, I am, of course, aware that these remarks will be received here with cynicism. Cynicism, that cloak that advertises our indifference and hides all human feeling. Well, I'm here to tell you that that cynicism, which we think protects us, in fact, destroys love, destroys our clients, and ultimately destroys ourselves. Colleagues, when our clients come to us confused and angry and hurting because their flame of love is guttering and threatens to die, do we seek to extinguish that flame so that we can sift through the smoldering wreckage for our paltry reward? Or do we fan this precious flame, this most precious flame, back into loving, roaring life? Do we counsel fear or trust? Do we seek to destroy or build? Do we meet our clients' problems with cynicism or with love?
A white-haired man sits rigidly upright, seemingly unimpressed. Miles hangs his head.
The choice is, of course, each of ours. For my part, I've made the leap of love, and there is no going back.
The secretary glowers.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the last time that I will address you as the president of No Man, or as a member.
Murmurs all round.
I intend to devote myself to pro bono work in East Los Angeles or one of those other.
Embarrassed, the secretary pinches the bridge of his nose.
God bless you all.
Miles makes a feeble farewell gesture, then shambles despondently away from the podium, one of his white shirt tails hanging out. He plods down the steps of the stage. Head bowed and arms hanging loosely at his sides, Miles traipses down a central aisle, dividing the seated audience in half. As he walks, delegates turn to watch him pass. A few people rise to their feet, and Miles gradually begins to take notice of the applause he's receiving. A little bemused, Miles shakes the outstretched hand of a mustachioed man. Miles gazes round with cautious appreciation. As he approaches the last few rows, their occupants stand and applaud him. Miles smirks proudly. One man pats him on the shoulder whilst another shakes his hand. Wrigley opens his arms wide. Miles echoes the gesture with a shrug and a broad grin. Wrigley bounds down some steps and hugs Miles. They jig on the spot, then Miles punches the air. Standing on the steps, Wrigley thrusts Miles' arm into the air. Heading for the bar.
So Wrigley, I'm going to be relinquishing my partnership in Massey Meyerson. If you care to join me in my new endeavor, I'd be delighted. Of course, I can't offer you the same kind of financial remuneration you've grown accustomed to, but the work will have to serve as its own reward. Barkeep, we'll have two of your finest scotches.
That's the,
propose a toast.
That's, barkeep. That's the soap that you now belong to,
in a junior capacity,
of course. Adam Donnelly.
On a TV.
Miles, this
will be a small operation, a boutique.
A medical drama.
In any firm, there could be only one ramrod. I don't see why my leadership skills should...
Howard?
Mackenzie, the mechanical marvel.
Howard?
You see, I have no nerves.
He's not an oil tycoon. I'm an actor.
The chief of surgery.
Miles gazes numbly at the screen.
This is highly unusual.
So, Marilyn married a soap actor, so she's...
There's no time to argue about protocol.
Poor.
Get yourself some clean scrubs and have them prepare the OR.
Well, thank God you have the prenup.
I have no prenup.
You have no prenup?
I have no prenup.
They face each other. In her hotel suite, Marilyn fastens a red makeup case with the initials MHRDM on it.
Thanks.
A bellhop takes it.
Okay.
Miles waddles in stiffly like a cowboy through the open double doors.
Marilyn?
Oh, hello, Miles.
Marilyn smiles politely at Miles, who gawps incredulously at her.
Going back to L.A.?
Yes. Look, Miles, I think it's only fair to warn you that after a decent interval, I intend to have Freddy seek an injunction that would forbid you to approach within 500 feet of my house.
You mean my house?
Oh, I believe the residents will be part of the settlement.
Miles plumps dejectedly onto the bed.
Marilyn, didn't last night mean anything to you?
Oh, but as much as it'll mean to you, half of your net worth.
Miles looks down.
Oh, Miles, you'll always be my favorite husband. But no more sentiment, darling. I really have to be going. The dog's winded.
Wearing a black and white checked suit and black hat with a sweeping brim, she strides out with a white poodle. Later, she's on a plane in first class.
You didn't win.
Excuse me?
I can always tell. Coming back from Vegas, who didn't win?
Marilyn nods and looks at the floor.
You're right.
She gazes thoughtfully out of the window.
But you're going through with it.
Yes. I just felt so sorry for him for a minute there. At the preliminary hearing, he just looked so beaten.
Well, he was beaten, fair and square.
I know, but...
Oh, that pathetic look. It's what they all fall back on when they don't have a p***up.
Sarah and Marilyn are lounging by Miles' pool in the sun.
Just stay strong until the divorce is final. Relax. And enjoy your pool.
Marilyn looks pensive. Sarah, in a big orange sun hat, sips a drink.
Do you think he's eating enough?
Marilyn!
A nurse is changing Herb's colostomy bag.
This woman has humbled, shamed, and disgraced the entire fight.
Yes, Herb.
Counselor, this fine deals in power. This fine deals in perception. This fame cannot prosper, nor long endure if it is perceived to be...
Herb bounces around.
Dancing to the music of a hoity-goity.
His tubes and drips rattle as he moves. Wrigley and Miles look glum.
Herb, for the first time in my career, I don't know what to do. I'm a patsy. I'm a sitting duck. I'm lost.
Lost!
Miles cowers.
I'll tell you what you can do. You can act like a man. Let me tell you something, smart guy. You thought you had it all figured out. Trust. Marriage. All your goddamn love. Now you listen to me. I'm gonna talk to you about the goddamn law. We save the law. We honor the law. Sometimes, counselor, we obey the law. But, counselor, this is not one of those times.
Miles and Wrigley are sitting at a restaurant table opposite a burly bald bloke with a breathing problem. He sucks on an inhaler.
Are you Wheezy Joe?
To use a Smith.
Well, we're here representing Mr. Smith on a matter of some delicacy.
Who's the pigeon?
The what?
Who you want to kill.
Yes, well, we would like, Mr. Smith would like you to neutralize, terminate, render into a state of, so that she isn't so much,
Breathing.
Yes, a business associate by the name of Marilyn Rexroth Doyle Massey. Smith, Massey.
Is that one person?
Some photos here of Ms. Rexroth and, that's the address that she's staying at. That is Mr. Smith's address. Massey's. Smith. It's Mr. Smith's address, although Mr. Smith is not directly involved.
Because of an impending legal matter, we need this to happen within a certain time frame.
On an expedited basis.
You're in a rush.
We're not in a rush.
Mr. Smith is.
Ugly Wheezy Joe sucks on his inhaler again. Miles twitches nervously. Joe breathes out.
She won't suffer, will she?
Not unless you pay extra.
Rex is playing trains. Rex and girls in scanty underwear are bouncing up and down on a large bed with a massive headboard designed like the front of a train. Rex is wearing his vest, boxer shorts and sock suspenders and a peach railway cap. a film of a train is being projected from the headboard onto a wall. Rex clutches his chest and collapses on the bed. His peaked cap is skewed over his face and his mouth is wide open. The dumb-looking girls peer down at him vacantly.
What's the matter, Rexy?
Wrigley is asleep in his apartment when the phone goes. He switches on the bedside lamp and picks up. Miles is asleep on a nearby sofa.
Hello? Yes, he's here. One moment, please.
Wrigley, in t-shirt and boxer shorts, pads over to Miles. There's a table littered with empty beer bottles and takeaway food boxes in front of the sofa. Wrigley switches on a standard lamp. Miles stirs and screws up his eyes.
Miles.
He hands Miles the phone.
It's for you.
Miles, dozy, unshaven, and with tousled, much longer hair, eyes the phone dubiously before answering.
Hello.
Wrigley watches him.
Yes. Yeah.
Miles, in brown pajamas, lolls on his pillow listening. Suddenly, he looks interested and sits up. His eyes are wide and sharp, his bushy hair is standing on end.
What?
Wrigley waits expectantly.
I see.
He hangs up and stares into space.
My God.
What?
That was Marvin Undermeyer. He was Rex Roth's personal attorney.
Yes? What do you mean, he was?
Rex had a massive coronary. In the middle of a business meeting. He's dead.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that, but you two weren't close, were you?
Marvin said that Rex's will was 4 years old. Never redrafted it. He was stinking rich.
Yes?
Everything, Marilyn.
There's a fiendish glint in Miles's eye. Both men open their mouths wide. Moments later, Miles makes a call.
She's not bored. She's richer than you. She is exposed. No prenup. She's a sitting duck.
She's a sitting duck. Mm-hmm. Can't kill her.
No.
No need.
No. It would be pointless. She's exposed.
It's pointless.
Why kill the only woman you've ever loved when she's the richer party?
She's rich. And I love her. Don't need to kill her. Ah.
What?
Ah.
You've reached Wheezy Joe.
Joe.
What do you want?
Hi, it's Miles Smith. Mr. Smith, calling to say on behalf of myself that it is
no-go.
Concerning no-go. Marilyn. I'm speaking with no knowledge. This is what Mr. Smith wants. This is what I want. I am Mrs. Smith.
Wrigley instructs him with hand signals.
Thank you.
Wrigley makes a hang-up sign.
That was good.
You think I'm protected? Am I protected?
I think it would hold up.
Marilyn.
Yes, yes, Marilyn.
What do we do? What if he's on his way there?
Yes. Oh!
If he's on his way there.
Oh, no! Marilyn!
Get her out by some time. By some time!
Miles and Wrigley drive along in their dressing gowns. Marilyn, lounging in pink satin pajamas, picks up the phone.
Hello?
Marilyn, you must leave the house immediately. It's imperative that you leave the house.
Hello, Miles.
Hello, dear.
Now, Miles, pending final settlement, you know that I'm entitled to use the house.
No, you don't understand, Marilyn. It's an emergency.
An emergency, yes.
What is it?
I forgot that I left the gas main on, which leaks.
Good gosh, that sounds dangerous.
It's a deadly, odorless, colorless, liquidless gas that attacks the central nervous system and causes diarrhea and facial tics.
Okay. All right, well, thanks for calling, Miles.
Okay, bye-bye.
Miles shrugs. Wrigley's driving.
I think she bought it.
Marilyn rings off. She stands and walks pensively to a photo of Miles.
So?
She picks it up.
Tell me.
Marilyn studies the photo.
Who sent you?
Wheezy Joe is cornered by the dogs.
Mr. Smith.
She shows him the photo.
Is this Mr. Smith?
Wheezy Joe peers.
No.
She blinks.
That's his lawyer.
Marilyn studies the photo thoughtfully.
Whatever they're paying you.
She looks at him steadily.
I'll double.
Miles and Wrigley pull up outside Miles's mansion.
What now?
We wait for Wheezy Joe. We tell him it's a no-go.
Careful.
Pepper spray.
Not wireless.
He hands Wrigley a can. Armed with their sprays, they enter the mansion. It's in darkness.
Looks like she's gone. Looks like she bought it. Good stuff. There's no one here. Except for the rot one.
Sure.
Rot one. You go that way.
After shaking their spray cans, they hold them at the ready, then separate and go off in different directions. Leafy plants cast shadows on the walls as the men's two silhouettes creep cautiously through the vast, airy house. Wrigley, wearing slippers and using large, exaggerated loping steps, tiptoes across a wooden floor. Miles walks slowly round the kitchen. Hearing a noise, he jumps and turns.
Wheezy Joe?
Miles hesitantly creeps across a hallway, tries a door handle, and goes through the door. Ridley, leafy shadows strobing across his face, stalks backwards along a corridor, his finger poised on the spray can button. Miles, finger also poised for action, backs along the same corridor but from the opposite direction. They bump into each other and let rip with the sprays. Holding their faces, both men reel around in pain and bump into walls. Miles ricochets off a wall straight into Wheezy Joe. He feels the big man's features.
Wheezy Joe! Thank God you're in time. You're not in time. We're in time. Thank God we're in time. Look, it's a no-go. Get it? No one need be the wiser. So you can just go. Goodbye. Thank you so much.
He sees Wheezy Joe putting earplugs.
No go. No contract. It's off. Will you explain to the monkey?
No go. We'll
settle your contract later. Look, you're fired, pal. Let it go. Walk away.
Golden parachute.
Don't let the screen door hit you. Does he speak any
Here's
language?
Here's what happened, Mr. Canary.
Wheezy Joe pulls a gun on them.
Wait.
Miles pepper sprays Wheezy Joe in the eyes and ducks. Miles blinded and fires about him wildly as Miles and Wheezy hop and weave around the room. Suddenly, Wheezy needs to use his inhaler. Still blinded, he gets the gun and the inhaler mixed up. He sprays the inhaler at Miles and has the gun in his mouth. Wheezy Joe drops to the floor. A curling wisp of smoke rises from him. The bullet he's fired has gone straight through the back of his head and has taken out a window behind. A shocked Miles and Ridley stare down at him.
Told him it was no go.
The screen fades to black. Daytime. Miles and Ridley are sitting at a highly polished wooden table in a conference room at their office. Ridley's sharpening a pencil and looking at his watch. He looks pleased with himself until Miles glares at him. Marilyn enters with Freddy. Ridley stands as the beautiful Marilyn slinks in wearing a cream suit. Miles stares at her gooily as she and Freddy sit down opposite them.
Gentlemen?
Freddy?
Marilyn slowly raises her dewy eyes and looks at Miles.
Hello, Marilyn.
Hello, Miles.
He looks at her softly and sadly.
This is where we first met, remember?
Of course I remember.
It's hard to believe that when you walk out that door today, you'll be walking out of my life forever.
It's not something I wanted either.
But then I guess something inside of me died when I realized that you'd hired a goon to kill me.
Wait a minute. You hired him to kill me.
No, both of you, wait a minute. Nobody hired anyone to kill anyone.
Hear, hear.
Apparently, from what I can gather, a burglar broke into your house.
Miles' house. Well,
whatever. A burglar broke in, intending to loot the place, repented, became despondent over his lifestyle, and shot himself.
So where does that leave you and me?
Well, we've outlined a settlement.
He hands Ridley a copy.
You think it's very generous?
My client is prepared to consider a reconciliation.
But how could I trust you, Miles, after all this?
See, that's exactly right.
You wounded me first, Marilyn. I'm not proud of what I've done, but God knows I did trust you once. If you could just give us another chance.
Well, if you'll pardon me here, I think my client is well on the point of considering.
How could I ever trust you again? I mean, really trust you, Miles.
Miles thinks, is about to speak, then stops. Gazing at Marilyn fixedly, he puts his pen down and pulls a folded document from the inside pocket of his jacket. He unfolds the document, picks up his pen, and signs eagerly.
There is nothing in the Massey prenup that says it can't be executed after the parties wed.
He slides the prenup over.
Well, if this, indeed is a Massey prenup. A cursory examination.
Marilyn rips it up. Ridley yells and fights back happy tears.
My God, Marilyn, you're exposed.
Ridley sobs. Marilyn and Miles stand and look into each other's eyes.
Marilyn.
Gazing at each other ardently, they lean over the table and kiss passionately. Ridley smiles, then sees Freddy grab the ripped up prenup. Ridley tries to retrieve it. Freddy seizes back the paper, rams it in his briefcase, and stomps out with Ridley in hot pursuit.
Come on, Freddy, not fair! Freddy!
Miles and Marilyn end their kiss, but their faces stay close together.
Did you hear something?
Only the patter of little lawyer's feet.
She leans in and kisses him hungrily. He pulls back slightly, and his passionate eyes search her face.
Where'd you find Howard?
The actor? I'm a TV producer. I think you know him. I gave him an idea for a new show, so he made me a partner.
They kiss longingly and draw apart again. Still close up to Marilyn's face, Miles looks deep into her eyes.
I guess that means I'm a partner.
I guess it does.
He smiles uncertainly.
And what exactly is it we're partners in?
She smiles naughtily, and they kiss and nibble each other's lips. The screen fades to black. TV game show titles.
Who gets what and who gets who? You'll find out on America's Funniest Divorce Videos. Here's the star of our show, Gus Pitch.
Gus runs out from between giant wedding rings which roll back.
You goddamn right, folks, I'm Gus Pitch. And we got a great show for you. We gonna make you laugh, we gonna make you cry. But most of all, we gonna nail your ass!
Nail your ass! The audience chant and punch the air with their fists. Behind Gus, inside each wedding ring, a gold circle flashes down three pink words. Love, honor, obey. Out of camera shot, Donovan, under the chorus line, urges the crowd on. The screen fades to black. ITSC audio description, written by Helen Vasey and Tom Worley, was read by Helen Vasey.
All lies and jest, still a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of a railway station, running scared, laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, searching for the places only they would know. Lie, lie, lie. Lie, lie, lie. Asking only workmen's wages, I go looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come on from the whores on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la